Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
If you're struggling with drugs, alcohol, gambling or food, or concerned about somebody who is, tune in to the Living Free show on 3CR at 1 p.m. every Thursday.
I don't know how I got there, but and I couldn't stop it.
I had stopped expecting that anybody cared.
Never enough. I'm never enough. It's never enough. He's never enough.
That was the confusion.
Tune in to Living Free, stories of recovery from addictive behaviour, Thursdays at 1 p.m. on 3CR. Or listen at 3CR on digital radio or podcasts and live streaming on 3cr.org.au.
Being able to centre myself and be okay in myself and turn my world around.
Living Free.
Welcome to the Living Free Show on 3CR Community Radio, 855 kHz on your AM dial. I'm Anne, and I'd like to acknowledge the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, traditional owners of the land from which 3CR transmits people-powered radio. We'd like to pay our respects to elders past and present and to acknowledge that the material and spiritual connection of Aboriginal people to this land was stolen from them. Each week on the Living Free Show, we showcase one of the many programs that assist in recovery from drug, alcohol, gambling, food, and other addictions. Our guests share their recovery stories and highlight that shared experience saves lives. Before we start, I'd like to remind you that the Living Free Show may involve discussion of topics such as suicide, mental illness, self-harm, and family violence. Please practice self-care and care of others when listening. Today, I'm joined by Julie. Julie is a member of Al-Anon. She is also a mental health and alcohol and drug therapist trained in dual diagnosis and family therapy. Julie works primarily with families who are suffering the effects of substance abuse.
This is a pre-recorded episode, and we talked a fair bit about Carl Jung without mentioning who Jung is. So for those unfamiliar, Carl Jung was a Swiss psychiatrist who explored the deeper layers of the psyche, including things like dreams and spiritual experiences. And he's of interest to us because Bill W., one of the founders of AA, was influenced by Jung's ideas about the role of spiritual experience in recovery from alcohol addiction. And that spiritual focus is, of course, at the heart of the 12 steps. And Jung actually wrote in a letter to Bill W. that he thought the craving for alcohol might actually be a misdirected longing for spiritual wholeness. And as you all know, the AA 12 steps of recovery are now being applied to many other substances and habits that we misuse to try and satisfy that longing. So I hope you enjoy this conversation in which we explore some of these connections.
Welcome, Julie.
Oh, welcome. Pleasure to be here.
So you'll talk today about your own story, and I'm sure we'll be braided into that will be your also your professional experience.
Family therapy is about the family system, which is, as an Al-Anon member, that's exactly what it's about. So really, I think at the basis of everything I studied and learned, whatever credentials we get, and I've done a lot of study, and I will get onto some of the Jungian stuff as well, it all interweaves with my journey in Al-Anon and the 12-step programs.
All right. Well, let's start the story then with your journey in Al-Anon. So just tell that story from wherever, whatever point you would like to tell it.
Sure. Well, I guess it starts with when you get the realization this is a problem, right? So I was married to a man who was from America. I thought, oh, he won't drink like these Aussie blokes. But I didn't realize he had this problem, the disease. And when we got married initially, I think my father probably knew, he looked and he saw he had the problem, because my parents, as I now find out, adult children, but it was removed sideways and backwards generationally. But yeah, that I learned later. I didn't really, because we'd moved away from our family, which was in the northern suburbs out in the country, a lot of people up there, European background I have. So but that came later. But with my husband, I met him and he saw something. I'm saying a little bit about my adult child myself here a little bit more. He saw my father with his temper, his violence, and how he could be very humiliating with that. And that was something I'd just come to accept and live with as a young woman. But as we know, that then diverts you into relationships. Well, when this man saw my father going right off about something and it was really hitting in the core of me, he didn't move away from me. So there was some that deeper part of myself that went, okay, you see me, you get me. He's witnessed this deeper shame, humiliated part of myself that I've covered over and over and over. And if we talk about the Jungian stuff just quickly a little bit, you know, they say the shadow, they talk about the shadow, this deeper stuff that sees and connects. And I realize now, so in my journey of then coming into, I was married for 28 years, I stuck with that. And that deeper premise kept me in that marriage because there's something in that that bound me to him and him to me as well.
That is so interesting. Yeah. And it must be just so compelling.
Oh, it is. But I think a lot of us have it. There's fabulous people like James Hollis's work in the Jungian stuff is amazing. He has books on this. You think you see one another eye to eye up here, but there's a deeper cross connection that happens down deep in, let's say, your soul.
Yeah. Or,
now, that's really deep work I'm talking about. But if we come back to me being married, my dad died perhaps when my youngest, I had three boys, was four. I had the three of them very quickly, so I was very caught up in looking after them. And my father would have said to me, he knew that there was a problem with the drinking. He could see it starting to happen. And mum and dad had that experience further back and we'd moved away from it in the family. So dad knew I was going to do a battle with it. And he said, you're strong, you can cope. Worst thing he could have said to me. But then he said, these three boys are your priority. So there's my responsibility in that. And then that old family thing of you made your bed, you lie in it, or you stick with it and you work through things together, because I watched my parents do that. You don't abandon people. You're loyal. They're my deeper traits, right? Mm. So I stuck there. My dad died when my youngest son was four. I just battled through for a while. And this, what I learned then when I came into Al-Anon, it's a progressive disease. So by the time I battled through for a while, I think the boys got to teenagers, and I was nearly spent and done. And you'd ask me about what is the tipping point. It was just like I was really sick. I had stomach ulcers. I had my energy levels, you know, whatever was wrong. And I rang AA and they said, we can't help you. You need Al-Anon. So I went to my first meeting, snuck there. So initially I went to Al-Anon when they'd be so drunk at home. I say they because he started drinking with my boys. And they're all musicians, all love music, all of them playing as well. So I'd have a rock band in the lounge room and I'd nick off to a meeting and get a little bit of medicine. But, you know, I came and went for a long while because I was terrified to broach this subject with him. And I think I was sharing that a little bit earlier with you. And then eventually someone in the rooms gave me that advice of going, if you're living with someone with this problem, you've got, if you tackle the problem, you become the problem. You are the enemy and it will pitch you against them. But I think the biggest shock to me is that I've come initially into the 12-step programs of Al-Anon, just get him to stop drinking. And then when you realize you come there, you're not there for them, you're there for yourself. And I can't make him stop drinking. That is an underlying feature of Al-Anon. You may not get them to stop drinking, but Al-Anon is for you because your family will get better if I get a better sanity.
So and you too. I mean, even before we talk about your family, you're talking about something. You describe being physically sick from this, right? Yeah. So you've got this underlying connection of the two shadow sides, if you accept the Jungian viewpoint, which makes a lot of sense. But really, what you're dealing with on the surface is pretty material stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. You know, and I've got really isolated. You know, four people in my family, you know, three went through psych wards, you know, like something's happened in their lives. And, you know, particularly happened with my husband, it happened with my youngest son. And another one, even though it was a small overnight thing, but he was having panic attacks and I didn't even know because I'm focused on the person with the problem. So your whole family system's under stress and strain. Absolutely. So Al-Anon is like an anchor that you finally come in, but it's a gentle program. Inch by inch, you go and you hear things and you go, And I think I was saying earlier about that merry-go-round of denial. I realised that's act one, person picks a drink up are all in the drama. They're like a trumped up little god, they say, I think, in that pamphlet. The second act is it all crashes down and everyone rushes in to fix it. Counsellors, everybody, family. And we put them back up on their pedestal, but we never get to act three. And that is where, and this is really profound for me, I finally realised reading that, the wife, in the article it says, the wife stands alone. And that was my journey, to stand against this. When I pulled away and everything was crashing down that last time, the pivotal point, my mum, my sister, they were my anchors, said, how can you do this, just abandon him? My boys, I had to sit in front of a board of psychiatrists, and I wanted people to come and support me. Nobody in my family system could come. And I was just felt, and I remember talking to the psychiatrist going, this is my husband in the psych ward, and saying, well, what about me and my family? And he said, oh, look, go home and research narcissism.
Oh, the flavour of the month, narcissism.
Yeah. Like pointed me, and he was just a powerful man with all, and all these people, these underlings sitting with him and this power over me, and go home and research that, because he said, this man's just wasting our time. It's all to get you back. And at that stage, I realised, I thought the only people that were there to help me in this, the pit of this, were the Al-Anon members. And I suppose I've been coming at least 3 years at that stage. And the reason it had all happened is I said to my husband, I can't do your drinking anymore. And so it just tipped over into something one night, a big explosion. And I thought, I'm going to die tonight, because he really, really was raging around the house. And I thought, this could be the end. And I thought, I'll just lay on the back couch, because at that stage, my eldest boy was in the back bedroom. And I thought, well, at least he'll bear witness to it. But my husband was just raging, and he took off and packed some things. And I thought, this is my chance now. So many times he'd run off and then come crawling back. And I picked up those pieces again, thinking, maybe this time. And then at that night I thought, well, this might be the end of me, but I can't do it. I just hit that point, I can't do it anymore. So he came back the next day and begged me to come back. And I said, I can't, you can't. And it was the hardest thing I've ever done, because in my childhood, I just always learnt to pitch in and try and fix things for my mum and my dad and all their arguments and what used to play out there. And even though they weren't drinkers, it was that thing, the pattern behaviours, the habitual behaviours we're in. So a program like Al-Anon, I just, even though my marriage didn't work, I've kept going to Al-Anon, because I realised, someone said to me, have a look at your family of origin. And I'm going, what do you mean? There's nothing wrong with them. My dad's an artist, and, you know, but I was in complete denial, you know what I mean? And I painted this picture, which adult, and I'm a member of ACA as well. I've done all that, had to, because the focus is on, like, I've just now, these authority figures, I've just given them this beautiful, beautiful picture so that I find them tolerable. And I could never look at what my father perpetrated with his anger and his physical violence.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, we sometimes, I've heard in ACA, which is Adult Children of Alcoholics, which is actually not affiliated with Al-Anon, but it's another 12-step program for adult children of alcoholics, well worth looking at. And we've had a few people on from ACA on this show. But they often talk about, you know, people become rageaholics. You can have a rageaholic as a parent, perhaps they were the child of an alcoholic, and that's sometimes how that intergenerational drama plays out.
Yeah, yeah. My father, his father was Dutch, you know, and he was beaten as a child, and I think it was not so much the drinking but that anger. And my father got, you know, put in bed for 2 weeks because he got strapped so badly with his horse traces. You know, so there was something, you know, they said, oh, he was a stubborn child, but that's not, we look at it now and we go, what was that about?
Yeah. Mm. Can we double back a bit now then? And, you know, you talked about the psychiatrist saying this is narcissism. You just have it look, just read about that and you get your answers. You found that you really got your answers from understanding the idea of a family system. And I just want to take you back to the idea of the merry-go-round called denial, and how this is actually a family drama and people are playing roles that they don't choose to play, they find themselves in. And every role is kind of essential to that drama. So we were talking before the show about the antagonist in a drama as being similar to the non-alcoholic in the alcoholic situation. Can you just talk a little bit more about how it's a family system and how changing one element of that system knocks the whole thing off?
Yeah, I think it's a lovely equation in AA, isn't it? And probably common on your program. They say A plus B equals C. So if C is the family system and I'm A and interrelating with B, we keep getting C. But if I change me, which is the detach, the principle of Al-Anon of detaching with love, and I stop interjecting and trying this energy that used to go into the family system, I feel like everything changed then. You know, and my boys used to look at me and go, you've done a backflip. Look at you. And there was one, I just remember this, it's worth saying, I remember this one time prior to all that night where everything blew up, finally getting enough sort of under my belt and my voice, getting my voice was the main thing. Because I had, you know, prior to my marriage, I actually had land, I'd worked three jobs, I was quite a dynamic person. But once I was in the marriage, I'd completely been... He'd taken away a lot of my bank accounts and a lot of things had played out, you know, like my car had got taken. And I just thought, how have I ended up here? But this one day when he was ranting and raving, going, you've ruined my life, and he was up one end of the house, I remember walking across and yelling back at him, going, well, if you were that unhappy, you should have effed off years ago. And the thing with that was, is my son, who was my oldest son, who was in the back bedroom, came racing out and looked me in the eye and he said, about time.
Oh, wow.
And that was pivotal for me. It was like, oh, my God, what does that tell you? In all this?
If you look at this whole thing as a stage and you're the antagonist and your husband's the protagonist, what role do you think is the eldest child been playing? What have they been?
Yeah, he got enlisted very, very early as his father's second in command. He did, and he was the one, because he was very sarcastic in his humour, supposed humour, used to keep us all. I think Al-Anon says it beautifully, you know, like sarcasm is like ripping the flesh, and he would have his power and control with words. You know, like he was really clever with words. He would do it that way. He wouldn't so much be physically violent, but he would circle around you, isolate you, get others to pick and make fun of you.
Oh,
and
one
of the examples I would give, you know, and he'd say to the boys, after things ended, he said, oh, if you're going to go see your mother, are you? Oh, well, make sure you take an overcoat because she's cold. You know, but he was really cutting, and he would enlist them in like they had to be part of this tribe, very powerful. Like if we go into the Jungian sort of archetypal energies, you know, the Jungians talk about the king, the warrior, the sage, and the lover, right? Just four archetypes. There's many, many more, but they're big ones, right? But there's a beautiful book by Robert Moore that talks about the underside of those, that if the king is a good steward of the realm, there's also the despot, which we could talk about America as long as we like. The despot wants it all for themselves. So they're the opposite. You were talking about that earlier, the negative energy of these archetypes. Well, he was like the sorcerer is what I'm going to say. And he enlisted and would drag people in. So when the marriage ended, what happened, and it's really worth saying, I remember I said to my middle son, who's still a great musician today, he's just brilliant, brilliant, brilliant. You know, he's so smart and brilliant, but so let down by me. And that's why I still go to Al-Anon, because I didn't keep him safe. But he just said, but, you know, in that moment, I said, when it all ended, you gravitated to him. He said, well, we had to. He said he was too powerful.
Oh, yeah.
So the three of them went to him, and I've gone through the psych ward with, you know, him doing all that, and they propped him up again. They were the ones that then propped up. And I had to continue to stand alone, and my family were looking at me going, how can you do this? And all I knew is Al-Anon, some part of Al-Anon was keeping me strong. And then some of the people I'd got to know in Al-Anon that I was starting to trust, I could ring them and talk to them and go, they knew my story and this is what's playing out. And I remember this dear friend I mentioned who's in more than one fellowship, when I had different ones in the hospital, and he go, how good's that? And I go, what do you mean? He said, well, you don't have to worry about them. They'll take care of them.
At least temporarily. At least
temporarily.
Respite.
Yeah. But it was, look, and it, I guess what I'm saying is, I might look fabulous now, I'm in the rooms, but we go through the baptism of fire with this disease. You've nailed it before. There's a pivotal point where it wants you and it wants to devour you. And not everybody, as I found, gets in, and this is pivotal for my family work, is not everybody gets recovery.
Mm.
They don't. So Al-Anon is there for people to really, if they don't get recovery, Al-Anon is still for you because it'll help you.
Yeah. We're going to take a break there and we'll come right back. And I'm really interested in when we come back, just talking a little bit more about the Jungian side of things.
If you or someone you care for is struggling with a mental illness or other disability and you need someone to talk to, you can call the Wellways Helpline. Wellways Helpline is a volunteer support and referral service that provides information to people experiencing mental health issues or other disabilities, as well as their family, friends and carers. We're here to talk if you are feeling socially isolated, seeking information about mental health or mental health services, or just need someone to talk to. As a peer-based service, everyone working at Wellways Helpline has a lived experience of mental health issues or disability. Wellways Helpline is a national service and operates Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m., excluding public holidays. So if you're struggling yourself or are struggling to help someone else, please call Wellways Helpline on 1300 111 500. That's 1300 111 500. Wellways supports 3CR.
3CR is about community, and we welcome your participation at the station.
3CR is open to a wide diversity of volunteers and is a great way to connect with Melbourne's activist community.
Have you ever thought about volunteering, doing a reception shift, getting a program on air,
training in radio skills, or contributing to one of the station's committees?
There are many ways to be involved at 3CR.
To find out more, go to 3cr.org.au and get in touch.
This is Living Free Show on 3CR 855 kHz on your AM radio dial and 3CR on digital radio. If you'd like to listen to one of our many podcasts, then you can find us on your preferred podcast platform or just Google 3CR Living Free and check out our website. You can also contact us via phone or email. Today my guest is Julie and we are chatting about living with alcoholism and with closeness to a problem drinker. And we're plunging into a bit more depth in this episode because Julie is also a alcohol and drug therapist with a Jungian take on things. Now, I'd like to just get straight back to Jung now. I think you've given a lot of description about what that theory is. Can you talk a little bit about what you know about the connection between Jung and Bill W., who was the originator, one of the co-originators of the 12-step program, AA?
Yes, I was fascinated. You know, I'm a bit of a, you know, go down rabbit holes to find any. And I found someone that did a bit of a thesis or something on the actual dialogue the two of them had. And I wasn't sure at first whether Bill went over to Switzerland to do Jung's work, but no, he didn't. He just did it through correspondence. And I think Jung was the one that corresponded beautifully with him. Beautiful. I've got his red book here, and he's a great artist, Jung as well. Fabulous. But he did correspond with Bill W. And he said to him along the lines, and you might correct me, you know, like, if you don't have the concept of a power greater than yourself, you'll be lost.
That was Jung saying that, wasn't it?
Jung saying that to Bill W., that you needed that. And we all know Bill went and did, you know, psychedelics. There was that part of his life where a friend said, go do that. And he did that. And he never picked a drink up again after that. And I think if we just do a synopsis of his story as I know it, he didn't pick a drink up, but he went about going, I know I have to rescue and save alcoholics, right? And did that for maybe 10 years until he was in depression. And then he realized he himself needed to do some work. And they'd written the 12 steps. But then what happened is he then needed the 12 traditions to know how to set boundaries and limits and whatever it was. And he then went and did his own Jungian therapy, got a Jungian therapist, I believe, and really started to work through things there. So how I got into Jung, though, was through a beautiful woman who was head of Al-Anon, worked in the office up there, beautiful woman. She's 100 now, still
alive. Just for the audience, head of Al-Anon, there's no such thing because we've got
this beautiful democratic structure, yes. No hierarchy, and it's a sort of a servant leadership program, isn't it? Where
that's the traditions, isn't it?
You're there to serve the.
But I'm elevating her there because she's a life member of the Jung Society, and I used to hear her, and I was fascinated with her. She was at the Cheltenham meeting. And she would give me time. You see, this is it, the adult child with me, someone that would give me time.
Listen to you.
And she'd go into these depths and she'd say, why don't you come to this meeting? So a girlfriend and I, another Al-Anon member, we went across to this first Jungian meeting at Camberwell. And I'm not kidding. And the Jungian therapist that they were dancing in the flames is what it was called. And I've got a ballet background that made a lot of sense to me, dancing in the flames.
Yep.
And the phoenix rising, right? That was really amazing. And it was Marion Woodman's work. And she struggled with food addictions and had a father complex and all of that. But she worked with a lot of people around their obesity and anorexia. So that was another take. But she was talking about her inside journey. And I remember sitting there like, you know, at Luna Park, they have those clowns with the mouth open and you put the balls in their mouth. I remember my mouth dropping open and looking at my friend going and pointing at the screen what we're watching. Is this landing for you?
Yeah.
And she's going, yes. Like it was absolutely profound when I went there because I just briefly said I've tried a lot of things. I went to Tara Institute. These friends had said, go do the meditation. And I would sit there with 100 people going, what's wrong with me? I cannot drop into this. And they talk about duality in your personality and just have unity in one. Well, I actually don't believe in that. That's why I'm the therapist I am. I think we have the shadow self and we have the way that we, our ego and our, well, we call it ego, but whatever circles around us and we put to the world how we present and what we are is all adaptive behavior.
Yeah.
And this world we live in now, but Jungians are the ones that talk about, well, what have we stuffed down the shadow self? What is that down there? And I'll just name one other person if I can. Donald Kelsher, because I have a supervisor who's a Jungian as well. She's my supervisor. And she said Donald Kelsher busted open the Jungian therapy because he talked about the adult child and what happens in the psyche. That ego that then serves the world keeps this child safe, but it closes over. And we really lose the insight of this child down here. And we struggle to get back to it. So there's so many therapies out there now that are talking about the child, the inner child, and talking to them.
Can I get you to, before we move on, tell me, spell out the surname of that last Donald.
Oh, Kelsched. I think it's K-A-L-S-C-H-E-D.
K-S-C-H-E-D. We'll put this in the show notes for people that want to look into this a little bit more.
Brilliant. If you like, look, it's very heavy.
Yeah.
Very heavy, but you can get them. I got his talking book. He actually has a chapter on Jung that explains Jung better than anyone I've heard. So it's worthwhile getting a talking book just on that chapter if you like this stuff, because Kelsher's can be really dense and he's got a lot of his work. But to read Jung is really dense. Like friends of mine, we've done his books and
it's hard going. It's hard going.
So you need other people to help interpret it. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Now, listen, so it was interesting to me, you know, Bill W., so the LSD's obviously opened something up for a start when he's tried the psychedelics, and we're back here again, you know, how many years later, 80 years later or something, and everyone's going, oh, maybe the psychedelics might be helpful. But then he went through.
Very big in the area I work in now, and I've trained in that area as well. I've trained in that as well.
Yeah. Well, we might come back to that. But then he had to go through the depression, and then he got back to Jung, et cetera. But it just is really worthwhile because that whole G-O-D word that's in the steps, which we call a higher power, and we go bend over backwards and go around the circles to say this is not the Christian God, this is just something outside of yourself, it's a higher power. I think the correspondence was that Jung had been working with alcoholics and found that there was a particular one or something, and he just thought that person can't get sober because they can't get that sense of a power outside of themselves. Yeah. Could you talk about how Jung sees that power or how you see it through a Jungian lens?
Well, I think some of the reference books I've got, you know, there's the New Age stuff in America you've got to be really wary of, you know, people that do a bit of yoga and it's a bit esoteric out there. Why I'm saying that is the European model of Jung and what they do is more you're in an existential crisis. is what it really is. And we have to do in the Jungian terms, and these are why, for me, what the 12 steps are. I've got to do a descent. Sorry, my dog's barking. I've got to go down and in. So the 12 steps are around about steps 1, 2, 3, you know, come to believe in a sense of the universe. For me, the existential crisis, you know, and that, what do they say? I can't, it can, I think I'll let it. It's a slow letting go of whatever I've come to believe, which can, and Jung would say this, it constricts us. I'm walking in shoes too small for myself. So then,
if we don't have a higher power,
if we think
we are the highest power,
I'm then playing God all the time, and you hear people say that in the rooms.
Yeah.
So there's this constant thing. You don't get it overnight. Like, I reckon I've been around over 20 years, but I'm just getting it now. Like that concept of letting go, because if you're an adult child, if we come back to that, you're constantly thinking, "No one's here to save me,"
and I'm here to save everyone else.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which
it's
is,
like
God, a which is the, what God's supposed to be doing.
and Jung just called them complexes. But it is an existential crisis, really, in all of us. We're constantly working against, constantly. But for me, it's a gradual letting go that I did, because I had this, if I'm going to lose everything I think that I need to be and do in the world that gives me my meaning. So I love Al-Anon because I'm slowly going into developing myself down in the descent. But there's a lovely book called The Descent to the Goddess, and that talks about the ancient Sumerian Eresh Gagal and Inanna, and that descent down, and they talk about stripping, going through the seven gates and stripping off all your regalia, your necklace, your garbs, your clothing. But that's a metaphor for all my protective factors, which ties back into Kelchet. He goes, this child down here, we've just buried them and they're underneath the weight of this protective layer. And it's been really hard for me in my journey of recovery as I trust people and I go to the rooms and I hear someone and after the meeting I'll go up to them and say, that was interesting what you shared. Can you tell me more about that? Which was this beautiful woman I'm talking about, Beryl, the Jungian. She just opened up my whole world to something I really, really needed. And I'd go to the meetings and she'd be there and she'd, you know, humble as everything. She was a librarian there, and I was so grateful she introduced me, though. Because once she did that, I knew where I had to go. I knew it was the descent. I had no problem with doing the steps. I had no problem with the concept of a power greater than myself, because like a lot of us, you know, we had, a Catholic background. My mum was terrified of dying. So there's another existential crisis I've got, you know, around, and my sister wouldn't be there for my mum. I was the only one sitting in the room when she took her last breath. But I could do it because I'd transitioned through being able to sit with whatever this was and be there for her last breath and know that she was going. And she loved the fact that I was there for her and I could be that for her.
Mm-hmm.
It was like such a gift that I could do that. And I'm in the toilet on the phone to an Al-Anon member going, everybody's left, no one's here with me, I'm on my own doing this. And she said, you've got this. Just hold your power greater than self with you and know you're in the wisdom of what has to pass through here.
Wow.
Yeah. So you get to face and do things which are your greatest fears.
And that's that idea that you're now in much bigger shoes. You can chuck away those little shoes that you thought were supporting
you. And if we use that metaphor of the descent to the goddess, every time I step through a fear, which is the 12-step program, you do that fearless moral inventory, I'm actually shedding another layer gently, especially in Al-Anon, of what it is that's been holding me back. And, mm-hmm. you know, that if we come back to, maybe we said it earlier, you know, I go into the rooms of Al-Anon and I think, I would never share that. I'm hearing people share at a deep level. I'm going, I would never tell anyone that. And that saying, you're as sick as your secrets. Well, this is the shedding of all those things that are actually holding me back. But in between the shedding, I've got to come to believe. And I think there's a beautiful saying in Al-Anon, I know it's in other fellowships too, I land at the ground of my feet and therein be content. Like, that's what I'm constantly coming back to.
And that's all I strive for. That's all I want in life, really. And you get to that point, don't you? That's all you want. And then you start to see every time you shift to the side of yourself again and go, no, come back. And I do that every day. At some point you shift away from yourself. You start doing something like, what would that person across the fence do? in this situation, or how come their something or other's better than mine, or something, some stupid thing like that. And then you think, no, you just do yourself. And it's so
do you know
obvious,
what's lovely watching you now is when you meet people then that are on this journey of doing this. And this is something that really ties back into my therapy. I used to always be looking at the ground, not eye gazing with people. And I was out the other day out somewhere, and it's someone I actually did, we worked out, I do know them. It was a younger person, but he was there, and I tripped over the back of him because he was kneeling down, and I said, "Oh, I'm sorry." And then I tripped over him again. I said, "Oh, I'm sorry again." And he stood up and turned around and looked me in the eye. And we stood there for ages looking into one another's eyes, the depth of someone's pool of their eyes. And it's like the insight down into the soul. And that ties into another great therapist, Alan Shaw, who says children and attachment theory that we hear a lot about, IFS, all these therapies. What's happened is the mothers or the caregivers, whether mother, father, are so busy, we're no longer doing eye-to-eye contact.
No.
And that's we don't realise that's the essence of presence.
Yep.
When you're in a meeting and you're hearing other people and you're absolutely engaging them with your eyes,
yep.
Your brain is changing. This is the unwiring, if we come back to a bit of neuroscience for me. This is what's powerful and why I love group work is when I engage someone and I engage their eyes and I look at them, I know it's undoing this attachment problem that they have with, they have a saying, you know, what fires together, wires together.
Oh,
that,
yeah, yeah.
That's the trauma, yeah. And we lock it and then we're in this worry and fear, the mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
When I actually do this process we're talking about now where my nervous system's relaxing, that polyvagal theory, I'm safe enough, is the saying. That's when the brain changes.
Safe enough, that's good too.
Is drinking costing you more than money? Alcoholics Anonymous provides a free and anonymous recovery service to anyone who wants to call it quits. Join millions of other alcoholics worldwide and take your first brave steps towards a new beginning. There are thousands of AA meetings happening every week across Australia. If you'd like to find your closest meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous or have any questions regarding this tried and tested treatment for alcoholism, call 1-300-AA-AA-AA. That's 1-300-22-22-22. Or visit aa.org.au.
This community service announcement is sponsored by Alcoholics Anonymous.
Tune in to Billabong Beats Tuesdays at 11 a.m. with me, Gavin Moore, giving a voice to both Western Kulin and Kulin First Nations peoples. Join me to talk about philosophy and dreamtime stories surrounding the waterhole, the sacred fire, the land, the plants and animals. Billabong Beats, 11 a.m. Tuesdays on 3CR.
This is a Living Free show on 3CR Digital Radio and live streaming on 3cr.org.au/streaming. Today I'm chatting to Julie about recovery from the effects of alcoholism and the word's not synchronicity, I can't think of the word. What is the word, Julie? The connection between the 12-step programs and Jungian theory.
Oh, it's just it's a marriage.
It's a marriage. It's a marriage. Okay.
It's the alchemy marriage, yeah.
Okay. Now, what I'm hearing a lot, and we haven't quite, we've gone into it to some extent, is the importance of storytelling. So we've, you know, the Jungian book, Dancing in the Flames, The Descent to the Goddess, and then, so these are not things like, you know, the nervous system and how it works. These are very poetic, literary sort of things. And And then we've got these characters in Jungian theory that you talk about: the king, the warrior, the sage, the lover. How the king can be the despot, and the sorcerers in there. And as a former English teacher, I kind of realised that there's so much you can best understand by reading a Greek play or a Shakespeare tragedy. There's not much beyond that. That tells you everything you need to know. And Alan, on all the 12 steps are based on storytelling too. Can you riff on that a bit?
Yeah, I love that, because the great psychodrama is when people are in that and you're acting it out. Like, I have someone at the moment in my life who loves, all of a sudden goes into character. Come back to Marion Woodman, it's exciting. You know, I used to sit there and I'd be all in my own sort of self-centered fear, you know, worried about what other people think. That's a typical Al-Anonic, right? We're worried about other people's opinions of us, right? And so we're constricted in deprivation, right? But Marion Woodman's therapy was, she'd go, well, what is that animal instinct in you? And this is James Hillman's work as well, other great Jungians. What it is you've got to actually enter into the animalistic. And Jung would say that's the prima materia, the primary material. Get back into your animal instinct. So some would say, I feel like a cat. She'd say, well, let's get down on the floor and walk on all fours and be a cat. And I'm horrified going, you'd never get me to do that. And now psychodrama and entering into this aliveness of yourself and who you really are, that's actually what it is. It's about dropping down into like all these therapies. And we're shifting away more and more now, which the area I was trained in, into cognitive behavioral therapy, even DBT. Don't get me wrong, you need a certain amount of that to get safe enough. But then to drop in, we're talking about the descent we were saying earlier. This is where it is. And it's exciting when you do it. You feel alive in it.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely alive. But I agree with you. Like, if you're drawn to things like Shakespeare was so theatrical, I think we need to bring it all back in. I know there's programs. If we mention Bessel van der Kolk's work, he highly recommends the psychodrama.
Yeah.
Young troubled youth as well.
Yeah. How do you spell his surname again? Van der...
D-E-K-O-L-K.
K-O-L-K. Van der Kolk. Yeah, that's right.
Van der Kolk. And you, if it's okay with you, I want to bring in this thing that I'm so excited about, because I don't work where I was working for that length of time, doing all the family work and such a good program. I'm not just saying it. And I had other people. It wasn't just about me. We brought in other people, like a dear friend, Pete, who came in giving his lived experience of coming through where we were and what it's like in getting recovery and being 10, 11 years clean and sober. He would come in that family program and give that perspective. I had someone else, Stacey, who would come in and she would give her perspective with her mum from living that way. And then I'd have other guest speakers coming in like you do here, because you said it before, we actually learn through story, coming back into storytelling. I think so. What's relevant for us in our life today, that's why I'm actually going back in, I'm going to work somewhere else and do the family program in another way, I think, because what I recognize is the power of group. Our brains will not change. And you hear it in the fellowship, a sick brain working on a sick brain, me trying to get better doesn't work. I'm like a broken record and I'm in the left brain trauma loop.
In a groove.
Yeah. And nothing changes there. But when I step in and we come back to the Jungian work, if we come back to that, I'm now doing this descent down into the right brain, which is the deep part of it. And we use very little of it. And there's a beautiful reference to Professor Ian, I think it's Gilchrist, I don't think it's McGilchrist. It's the master and the emissary. He says, we think our left brain's running the show. It's not. The right brain is the originator of all ideas. But with this modern world we live in, colonialism, materialism is the god, we're just caught in all left brain thinking more, 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 need what we want. And Marion Woodman would say is materialism is the lack of mother, how we mother ourselves. That was her big thing that she used to say.
Right. So buying a lot of stuff, you're just trying to get better, get mothered.
Yeah, and I think I didn't in the 12-step program, didn't Bill W. go, you know, AA says we've got a hole in the soul.
Mm-hmm. Trying to fill it.
Trying to fill it with all this other stuff. But that ties back into what you said beautifully before, Anne, like, you know, what is this concept of a power greater than ourselves? When I can transcend across and start to come to believe, then I'm entering more right brain. And now I'm more open and willing and ready for something to come in. And it's going to be really, it's creative. I used to think of creatives as being all right brain and the rest of us analytic left. The scientists, no.
I used to think
I was just something that was, I didn't know where I fitted. I thought everyone else had power over. You know, that was my deprivation as an adult child. Not enough investment into me and my family of origin. Always trying to fix everyone else's problem. And so I just developed that pattern. But now in recovery, I would say myself in recovery, it's actually all about me discovering my own creativity.
That's a great point too, that the creativity and freedom that comes, that's why we're called living free. I just wanted to double back a bit just because I had an idea about people who say, oh, I couldn't do anything, a program that needs me to believe in a higher power, and they walk back away from the 12 steps. And then I just thought, well, you've already got a higher power probably. It's probably buying stuff, eating stuff. It's the thing you got, drinking stuff, shooting up stuff. It's the stuff you go to when you're looking for something greater than yourself to take away what you don't want. So we've all got higher powers anyway. Well, we don't, they're not necessarily higher, but they are things outside of ourselves. So, can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, well, if it's okay, I want to jump to my latest, greatest thing that I've jumped in on, which is another, through my supervisor who was the president at the Jung Society, and it is amazing. And I did a lot of dream work with her, you know, so I was trained in psychedelics and all this area. And the clinical model has overtaken a lot of that to something that was an ancient ritual. But so what we're lacking is ritual in our lives. So, yes, the buying, it's like a ritual. We're out there eating food. We've got rituals around what we think that, and the whole, and I know I used to get chocolate and eat chocolate, and I'd eat it, and I'd go 2 for 1. I'd go, oh, yeah, that's not going to fill me. I'd eat it, and then I'd think, I'm not even satisfied with it. It doesn't hit this spot in me. So I really had to look at my diet as well. I had to look at how do I nourish myself. But what I'm saying about Annette was I started doing dream work, because what I love about dreams and Jung, he says that's what's deep in your psyche. When you start to do this dream work and allow that to amplify and talk about it, that's when it's me. It's coming from me. It's not from an outside book. It's me. So I did a lot of work with her around that 4 years I've worked with her. And then what's happened is she put me onto Robert Bosnak's work, and I'm now involved with his last 3-year course he's doing. It's international, and I have a partner I work with at the moment. She's in China of all places, and they're really more advanced than what we realize. We hear all the economics of China, and I listen to her and I'm going, her mum's a therapist, like, and she's brilliant. She's involved with film over there, and like totally different inside picture of what's happening in her lifestyle. But we do this dream work, and I'm going to use these words, and if anyone out there will probably, but the words that Bosnak gets us to look at is something called we, and you talk about storytelling, we actually learn by mimicking. So the book he's got me to read is something called Mimesis and Alterity. And I have been fascinated with this, as I do, for the last 6 months. And this is so profound, it's changing everything in my life yet again, another platform to work off. And then I have a friend who's doing a master's in photography, and she says there's another word that the marriage of that is mephexis. And I'm thinking, where did these words come from? Well, they're ancient Greek words, and it comes, you know, from these, if you like this kind of stuff. But what Bosnak is saying, he gets into the dream, but he says we don't want to use our mind to analyze a dream. We all go, oh, that's personal, my auntie, my uncle. No, he says you've got to drop into the somatic memory. So what he says is we think our minds, coming back to our minds, are running the show. They're not. He says our bodies hold the ancient memory of everything about us. He said they have the image of what it is, and the story and the dialogue is through the image. But what I've got to do is somatically, and this is the work I'm doing now, and I'm going to bring it into a therapy model I'm going to do myself, make it available for those that want to do it, is you enter the dream. So you're like a protagonist in the dream. But mm-hmm. I do it in feeling, sensing. And I can't tell you how profound this is and how it then changes everything that manifests in my life. My life feels complete in a whole different way. And it comes back to what you're saying, and I presume we're getting close to the end of this podcast, but it comes back to then why people use alcohol and drugs. We've lost this deeper essence and presence in how to be in our lives. And if I don't have other people that are walking this walk and talking this talk, I'm yet again on one hand clapping out there in this material mm-hmm. world. Mm-hmm. But Bosnack, Robert Bosnack, his work is about, he says we've been, our thinking has been colonized 2,000 years ago.
Our thinking has been colonized 2,000 years, colonized by what?
Well, the Greeks started getting into the analytic mind.
And then we've got really addicted to the analytic mind. Yeah, totally yeah. get yeah. that. Yeah,
Let's work it yeah. all out.
Even yeah. which has been really great for building spaceships and yeah. finding antibiotics and stuff. But it's also been very destructive at a global level. Mm. And at an individual level, and
we
it really
think we've
has
got power over, don't we? We think we're, it comes back to the
we
equation.
Think we're God.
We think we're God, yeah.
And we run our brain, our thinking. We think as though we're God. I don't think we really do. Especially as an adult child of an alcoholic myself, I think, say, and I'll be in a social situation, and I think if someone's upset, I'm responsible for that. I've either caused it, or at least I have to go and try and fix it. It's like, who do you think you actually are? You know, like, you're not God. You're just one little mortal in this whatever little part of the play you're in at that point, you know. Yeah, and it's been great talking to you because, you know, I've been in Al-Anon for a long time and really practiced the program. And what's amazing to me is how much I seem to have come up with stuff, and then I'll go, oh, that's what Jung meant. Oh, that's what the Christians mean when they talk about that. Or, you know, and that what makes me think it's I'm on the right track because, you know, there's a whole, what am I saying? There's a whole tradition of this, you know, and it's always run parallel to this rational thing, hasn't it? Except sometimes you'd get burnt at the stake for being a witch or something or. Mm. But
a whole lot of us, I'm saying, got taken out that were thinking, and a lot of them were just midwives
or herbal remedy dispensers. Yeah. Well, we've gone right off the track.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, but isn't that the fun of this kind of thing? But one thing I do want to say is, I just want to put a plug into the reason I did this work. I had three boys, and I mentioned I lost my younger son Jeff.
Well, we mentioned that when we talked before.
Okay. Yeah, but so I did lose Jeff to suicide as well. And that nearly tipped me over the edge. I've had to work really hard, and I don't want anyone to think that this has been easy every step of the way. And I think Bessel van der Kolk's work, his research is me-search. I needed to go to the depths of me to really find out what happened. But see, I want to just say this, even in that with my son, at the end, he looked at me and he said, Mum, I got it all wrong. You're the one that loves me, because I was working so hard to try and fix him and going through this whole medical model and really worked my ass off to try and bring it back to something. But, you know, he gave me the gift of love at the end, and he's somehow with me, moving me forward in a lot of ways and where I am now. But the reason I went into the work I did, and I have to say this, Robert Bly was another man, a Jungian, who's a poet, and he worked a lot with Marion Woodman. And there's something called the Mankind Project, which I think I said to you, there's someone in my life that's very near and dear, Chris, that I listened to and heard has done a lot of that work, and it's so near and dear to me, the work with men.
Yeah.
Because so many men are suffering.
Yeah.
Out there, they get caught up. There's a whole lot of, I don't want to get controversial here, but so much out there. And that Mankind Project, or Spirited Men, is another one. There's another one, Spirited Women. You don't have to always do the 12-step programs, but men supporting men is something we need in this society, men that are emotionally available and well.
Good men supporting other men. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the only plug I want to put in there, that for me has been a driving factor in everything. I've worked a lot with men who somehow found me safe enough because I wasn't looking through a lens of what men have been
do to women or anything.
Yeah, all men are like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Currently, but that's not true. Men are suffering as much as women are.
Yeah.
And I needed to say that. That's really powerful for me to say because I've got sons that have got children themselves and I watch them cook, clean, wash, help with the children and work as well. And they multitask. And then, you know, if something goes wrong in therapy, which one of my boys spoke about, sometimes therapists can look at them like, oh, you're this type of patriarchal male. No, a lot of men are copying that. That is another aside. I know, and I don't want to be controversial, but you know, we need equality in that. In this,
And that's the left brain kicking in again. The problem is this reliance on the, you know, I know about patriarchy, so I'm just going to apply that hammer to this problem that I'm here instead of, as you say, looking into the eyes of that man and seeing who's really there.
I love that. Yeah.
Well, I think we'll end it there because we have run out of time and I would love to speak to you for another hour.
Thank you.
Now, if the content in the segment you just listened to, because it did mention death by suicide, if that's raised any questions or caused distress, please call Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au. Suicide Callback Service is 1300 659 467. Or you can go to suicidecallbackservice.org.au. Suicide Line Victoria is 1300 651 251, suicideline.org.au. Beyond Blue for depression is 1300 222 636, beyondblue.org.au. Men's Line Australia is 1300 789978. mensline.org.au and Headspace is at headspace.org.au. We did mention also family violence, so 1-800-RESPECT, 1-800-737-732, 1-800-RESPECT.org.au. If you're concerned about drinking in a relative or friend and would like to find out more about Al-Anon, you can contact them on 1300 252 666 or go to alanon.org.au. If you're concerned about your own drinking, you can contact Alcoholics Anonymous on 1300 222 222 or go online at aa.org.au. Again, the Lifeline number is 13 11 14. Coming up next, we have Belle and Noir, The Spirit of Wah, hosted by Uncle Taljum Choco Edwards. Join Uncle Choco on a journey of belonging and movement through sing-alongs and yarns. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and stay tuned now for more Radical Radio on 3CR. And to take us out, here's a little bit of Avi Kaplan with The First Place I Go.
First place I go, the last thing I needed, the 1,000-pound stone, troubles I'm feeling. When my eyes have closed to right when they open, mind's on the go and I'm laying here hoping that I can find my way back to the light. It's for me to say, no, you won't decide, 'cause I'm gonna leave you out in the cold. I'm gonna pray that door stays closed, 'cause I've spent enough time with you to know the last thing I need is the first.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.